Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lessons with Leaders, a special edition of Lehigh Valley Discourse. I am your host, Lori Siebert. Our producer tonight is Neil Heaver. Our guest this evening is Anne Baum. Anne is Lehigh Valley Executive and Vice President, Distribution Channels and Labor Relations at Lehigh Valley Capital Blue Cross. In this capacity, she is the senior leader in the Capital Blue Cross Lehigh Valley office. She also leads the network of over 5,500 producers and is responsible for the plan's organized labor customers. Since joining the company in January 2010, Ms. Baum has been involved with strategic planning, operations, partnership development, community relations, corporate giving, sales, and account management throughout Capital Blue Cross's Eastern Service area. Ms. Baum is a member of the boards and executive committees of the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce, United Way, Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation, Girl Scouts of Eastern PA, Lehigh Valley Industrial Parks, Iron Pigs Charities, and Northampton Community College Foundation. She serves on the Lehigh University Health Systems Engineering Industry Advisory Council, the BCBSA National Labor Office Board, and the Downtown Allentown Community Development Initiative. Anne earned her BS in biology from the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and her MS in health systems management from Rush University in Chicago. She is certified by the Protocol School of Washington as a protocol and etiquette consultant. Among her many accolades, her most recent include the Girl Scouts Take the Lead Award and the Chamber Women's Business Council Athena Award in 2013. In 2015, she was named as a Woman of Influence by Lehigh Valley Business. She has run her own leadership company, Vision Accomplished, and authored a recent book, Small Mistakes, Big Consequences. Develop your soft skills to help you succeed. We look forward to discussing that as well. I'm almost out of breath from all that Anne does, but I want to welcome you to the show, Anne. Thank you so much for coming on.
Great. Thank you, Lori. Thank you for having me.
Well, everyone in the Lehigh Valley, I think, knows who you are. You have so much to share about leadership, and you are such a role model in our community. So let's take some time to introduce you to those who don't know you. And I'm curious, because you graduated from the University of Illinois. I'm a Michigander, so I'm from that area. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about growing up, and are you from the Midwest?
I am. I grew up in a suburb of Chicago called Glenview, Illinois, and lived most of my life in the Chicago area before moving here to the Lehigh Valley. And I came here to do a consulting project at St. Luke's and fell in love with the community, and we moved here and stayed.
Wow, wow. So growing up in the Midwest, your family was from there. What size family did you come from?
So I have two younger brothers, and my parents were from Southern Illinois, and we lived in the Chicago area, which compared to where they grew up was the big city and exciting. So because our parents had wanted to get out of the central Illinois world to the big city, I think that instilled in us this desire to get out and go somewhere new and bigger and more fun. So that's why we ended up out here. And ironically, the winters are better here than in Chicago.
That's what keeps me here too, yes. Anne, if someone asks. So you said two younger brothers, which means no surprise. Are you the oldest?
I am the oldest,
okay.
Yes.
That is one of the consistent things we find in doing these Lessons with Leaders interviews. Quite often, the folks I'm talking to happen to be the oldest.
Interesting.
Yes. So growing up, did you feel like you had to be a role model for those younger brothers, or were they kind of very independent of that?
I think we were all very independent, but I'm the oldest in my family. I'm the oldest grandchild on my mother's side, and she's the oldest. And then I'm not the oldest grandchild on my father's side, but the oldest grandchildren were significantly older than me. So there was this expectation that in my role as this center stage grandchild child that I had to accomplish something. So I think it was, nobody ever said that to me. There was no inherent pressure, but it was just, you are the center of everyone's universe, you better do something well.
You better bring it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes,
people
yes.
were watching. So do you feel like your brothers watched? Are you close with your brothers?
I am. I'm close with both of them. One is 2 years younger than me, so we were in high school together and shared many of the same friends. My other brother is 6 years younger, so mm-hmm. in some sense, he lived somewhat of the only child life. But yeah. but I am close with both of them. They both still live in the Chicago area.
So you get back to the Midwest from time to time.
I do.
Okay, and they get out here and visit as well?
Not as much as I'd like, but they do come out and
visit.
So
you haven't lured them here yet.
I'm trying.
Now, your bachelor's degree was in biology and your master's degree in health systems management. So, you know, kind of that science background. So what took you on that path? What was the spark to get you interested in, you know, whether it's healthcare or biology?
Well, I was always interested from a very young age in hospitals, doctors. There used to be a show, and I'm going to show my age. There used to be a show on television called Emergency.
Oh, I loved Emergency.
Yes, and, you know, Rampart, you know, I love that. Johnny Gage, Roy DeSoto. I watched that. I even have a project that I did in second grade where I defined the terms on Emergency and put them in a little booklet. So I was always intrigued by the healthcare industry. So naturally I thought, well, I'll be a doctor. That's what you do. You go out, you become a doctor, Dr. Brackett. Mm-hmm. And I studied science, went to school for science, and about halfway through my junior year in college, which, by the way, for everybody listening, it's a terrible time to decide this. I decided that I didn't really like science. But I still loved healthcare. So I started taking in my senior year some healthcare business courses and then found the program at Rush. Rush University is actually a university operated by the Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Medical Center. Mm-hmm. So they operate their own university to train administrators, nurses, doctors, all of the professionals that they need. So the program I enrolled in was about teaching the business side of hospitals and healthcare. And from that, I was able to move on and go into consulting and eventually ended up here in the Lehigh Valley.
So the biology still served you well. So you finished
yes,
your degree in biology.
I
and
did.
From that springboarded into the health system so that you could understand the health speak, so
I
to
did.
Speak. So you were happy with that decision. It's interesting that you kind of were able to pivot. So how stressful was that if you can go back there, your junior year, and you said, oh gosh, this isn't the time to change, you know, your mind. So can you go back for me to your junior year in college and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not sure I like science, but I'm going to see this through and look for other opportunities. Did you do that in that moment and discover this other opportunity when you were still in your four-year program? Or did you realize it after you graduated, what am I going to do with this degree?
It was a moment of panic, right? You've been on this path. You're preparing to go to medical school and become a physician, and then suddenly you're thinking, maybe this isn't my thing. So it was not, yeah, I'll just change and switch to something new. It was thinking, oh no, what now? What do I do? And I knew I had to finish because I was so far along in my science degree. It was silly to not finish that up. But I was lucky that there were the healthcare business courses available at my school so I could test it out. Mm-hmm. I did not test out those courses with the intent of making a career in the business side of healthcare. I would love to say that I was that organized and well planned, but I knew I liked healthcare and this was something that was available. So I tested it. And then I found that I really enjoyed it. I then took a whole nother semester and started a master's in science education, ironically, and took some summer classes to see, do I want to become a teacher of science, which is kind of funny when you think about, oh, you don't love science. But then that's when I learned more about the program at Rush and connected that concept with the courses I had taken. And once I got into that program, I knew I had found the right place. So sometimes it's trying different things along the road, trying not to panic, trying not to totally implode, and looking for where that right fit will ultimately be.
Yeah, and really having confidence kind of in the journey as well, I would almost say, because I'm sure you felt at some point you would figure it out.
Yes, well, I had to, right?
So as the oldest child with right, everyone watching.
Right, so back to that other thing. Like, it wasn't like I could say, oh, no, you know what? I'm just giving up. Yeah. That giving up was not an option, so I continually had to pivot and find that new road.
So we think about what you just said, and it makes me think of doing things on purpose or by opportunity. So can you talk about how those might relate to each other, kind of in what you just explained, and even, you know, ongoing in your career, when a career can happen on purpose or by opportunity?
Yes. Yeah, so I think that you always have to be open to opportunity. And I find that those people that are so completely set in a particular direction, and that direction goes awry, something changes, and they're not open to opportunity, that's when that panic moment, that desperation moment, that I'm quitting and just doing something different happens. If you're always looking and feeling out those opportunities and being open to saying yes to new things, I think we're surrounded constantly by these opportunities, but you need to be aware and open to accepting.
Yeah, and to seeing them mm-hmm. when they're out there. Well, can we then talk about how you did that consulting, you said, that brought you out here? Where was that? Was that part of your master's program? Was that an opportunity given there? Or had you taken a job in Chicago with a firm where you were consulting that brought you here?
So when I graduated, the beauty of my graduate program was we went to school in the morning, and then in the afternoons, we had paid internships. So we got to try out all of these different types of jobs during the 2 years we were in the program. So by the time I graduated, I knew that consulting was of great interest to me. So I was actually working for a consulting firm, and one of the areas of expertise that I had developed was building these physician hospital organizations. So by being open to opportunity within the firm, I learned something where I had a talent, and then I became the person that they would send around when we would build these organizations to be the interim executive director. I could have easily said, nope, I'm not traveling. Right. I'll only work from this area, or I'm only interested in this particular part of our firm. But I found that being open to trying new things and learning new things and open to travel really helped me, because it gave me great learning really fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you think about it, you were successful already in the transition from biology and wanting to be a doctor into this new role. So you were rewarded kind of previously by being open to those opportunities and things like that. So you were working at that consulting firm. You had this opportunity. You came out here. At what point did you start your family?
Well, the irony of this, it's such a great question. And for those that would never think of doing what I did, in retrospect, I can't believe I did it. But I had developed this expertise with my firm, and then my son was born. And I had just come back to work, and our lead partner in this particular segment of the firm said, would you be willing to go to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Which, by the way, I had no idea where this was. I only imagined like this dark and dirty steel city, which of course is nothing like right. what this wonderful place is. And I said, yes, I'll do it as long as I can bring my baby with me. Okay, so.
Good girl.
Oh, my gosh. Like, in retrospect, I did it at the time because that was the only way I could imagine doing the job and traveling. But I can't believe I did that. And they said yes. And so the beauty of it was St. Luke's was interested in having me come. They have a daycare center right there. So my son and I would leave on Sunday nights from Chicago. We'd fly out here to LVIA. We stayed in one of their board members' condos who happened to be going to Florida. My son would go to Lehigh Valley Child Center right across the street. And then he and I would fly home on Thursday evenings. So it worked out fabulously. And taking that risk, which at the time I just told them this is what I need, and them accomplish or them allowing me to do that made everything possible. So I guess my message is don't be afraid to ask. The worst they could have said was no, and then I probably would have figured out something else. But I asked, and they said yes, and it worked out fabulously.
Yeah, there's a lesson right there. Don't make assumptions.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you did that for some period of time. And then decided, is it worth it to make a move here?
Yes. So the whole time I was serving as the interim executive director, they were working with a search firm to find somebody to be the permanent executive director, as was the case many times. This was my role. My role was not to become the permanent person. My firm would send me around. I'd do the either the startup and interim or just the startup, and then they'd find somebody to run it permanently. They weren't finding what they were looking for and offered the position to me. So my husband, Brad, came out. We took a look at the Lehigh Valley. Thought we'd stay here for a couple years. And 26 years later, we love it. We absolutely love this place.
Yeah, the people from the Midwest, we think we're coming here for just a couple years because I, too, thought we were only coming here for a couple years. And we're here, I don't know how long, since 1988.
Yeah, so, it's a fabulous place.
It's been a long time. But, yeah, I think that they couldn't find what they wanted because they knew it was sitting right in front of them.
And so that's so nice of you to say. Thank you.
I want to talk about when we come back from this next break, your protocol certification. So if you could just give us a little hint before we go to break, what is a protocol certification?
So the certification is in protocol and etiquette, and it's where you learn about whether it's business behavior or actually formal protocol as it relates to the government or the Army and things like that. So okay. It's about how you do business.
Okay, interesting. So I want to learn more about that and what made you go that direction and how this fits into everything else that you've been doing. Folks, we are talking with Ann Baum, Lehigh Valley Executive and Vice President of Distribution Channels and Labor Relations at Capital Blue Cross. And you are listening to Lessons with Leaders. We will be back in just a moment.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails, discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders. Our guest this evening is Ann Baum, Lehigh Valley Executive and Vice President, Distribution Channels, Labor Relations, Capital Blue Cross. Ann, we were talking before our last break about the protocol certification. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and how that came about?
One of the things that I've always been passionate about is human behavior and how people interact with one another and really helping people learn those things that get in their way. And my friend, who was one of our consultants when I was at St. Luke's, was familiar with the Protocol School of Washington. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I had a passion for this type of information, she thought it would be great for my consulting to go become certified in this. So I went and I actually participated in two programs with them, one where I got their general certification in protocol and etiquette, but also in children's protocol and etiquette. And that became the basis for the leadership components that I developed within my company, Vision Accomplished. So I learned so much about behavior and the rules of the game and how people interact with one another, but also how to teach it. And it really built not only my confidence in the subject matter, but also my confidence in my ability to share my experience with others so that they had the opportunity to learn, quite frankly, from my mistakes or things that maybe I didn't understand. I've then able to help others be more successful.
Yeah. So you had left then St. Luke's and were thinking about doing something on your own, and you started Vision Accomplished.
I did. Yes. So I actually left St. Luke's, that nice full-time job, to go out and try my hand at owning my own business. And it was a great experience. Frankly, I think everybody should take the opportunity to try and start up or run a business, because you learn so much about finance, about marketing, about communication, about legal aspects. There's so much to learn about how a business operates. And by starting up your own firm, you have to learn it, and you're the sole person responsible for it. It's a great experience.
So how did your prior experience doing the consulting and then working at St. Luke's benefit you in setting this business up? Did you take some of those skills then and transfer them?
Absolutely. So when I was at St. Luke's, we had our own small company called Eastern Pennsylvania Health Network that ran under the umbrella of St. Luke's. So I had had some experience in starting up, but that was starting up under a friendly parent who helps you get going. So I knew the basics of becoming a business. You have to have bylaws. You have to know who your market is. So I knew some of the basics, and then took that knowledge from both my consulting experience and from St. Luke's and put that into getting a business up and running.
So how else did you grow with Vision Accomplished? So you become a business owner, but how else did you grow through that experience?
Well, I'll tell you a couple of things that I would answer. One, I learned probably better than any time in my whole career how valuable relationships and your network is. So even though I was out there on my own, I wasn't out there on my own, because through my experience at St. Luke's, through my experience as a consultant, I knew all of these people that when I asked them were willing to give me advice. And I encourage anybody to ask others for advice. Don't be afraid. They'll tell you. You don't have to use it, but it's great to have those reliable sources. The other thing I learned is I could do it. That
once again,
that's a pretty big risk to quit your job and start your own business. But I learned, and I made mistakes. I learned what not to do, and I learned what worked, what didn't, where to put your money. I mean, there's definitely money that I put into some brochures and things that probably was the wrong money to spend. And then other money that I put into things that really worked. So you learn to learn from your mistakes, and you also learn to be courageous and humble, and how important it is to deliver the best that you can deliver at every opportunity.
I'm writing that down because that is also another great lesson in leadership, right? To deliver the best, because if you attempt to always deliver the best, then who can wrong you for that, right?
Right.
The best that you're able to do.
Right, right. I think you're never, it's not always going to be perfect, but as long as you did everything you could within your power and ability to deliver the best that you can, I think you're right. That's all And it's the best you can do.
And you were really sharing that with the people that you were consulting with. So in Vision Accomplished, you were working with leaders in the community to help them be all that they could be and deliver the best.
Well, yes. And one of the greatest accomplishment of Vision Accomplished, kind of funny to say accomplishment in accomplished, I had a fabulous partnership with Elmer Gates, who was a terrific mentor to me. But together, what we did was we went out and partnered with existing leaders in the communities, primarily CEOs of the big companies and some smaller ones. And we invited them to come teach their knowledge, their skill set, their expertise to the people that we were teaching through our programs. And it was so wonderful to watch. One, almost every single person that we invited didn't think they had something to offer. They said, oh, no, I'm not. I just do my thing. I'm not special. And every single one of them had a wonderful story to tell, had great information that our students could learn from. So it was nice on both sides. The students garnered this information that otherwise wouldn't have been available to them. And the leaders themselves got to see how others could learn from what it was that they had learned throughout their career.
Right,
so it was really a great, it was great on both sides of the equation.
Right. So really, folks who sometimes take leadership roles might take it for granted. They don't always recognize themselves as leaders. They may not think they have something to share, but that's really a lesson even for leaders then, that if you are in those roles, you should take advantage of sharing your experiences, life experiences, your stories, because that will just further bolster other upcoming leaders that we want and need, right?
Right. And you never know who's watching and what they'll do with that information. So it's astounding, some of the folks that we've seen that came through our programs that now have established themselves as leaders in the community. So that's probably the most rewarding thing to know that something that we put together somewhat on a whim resulted in another person being successful and making the Valley stronger and better.
Well, which we see. We see over and over. Don Cunningham was here that we interviewed on our last Lessons with Leaders. So people can get that on WDIY.org, by the way. And he's with the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation. And that's what he is also promoting. And if we do it all together, it's just wonderful things come from it. And I want to go to some quotes I had found from a seminar that you had given. You might
this
not
is
even
a little
know
scary.
That's out there. But one of the quotes, and I'm going to do these one at a time. But the first quote was, overcome your head trash. I absolutely loved that. Overcome your head trash, which are all the reasons you tell yourself why you're not good enough. Turn your negative thoughts into positives. So just some thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, I cannot take ownership of head trash. I did hear it first from Tom Garrity of Compass Point Consulting, so I have to give him a shout out for that. I absolutely love that term because it is everything that you let run around in your head that gets in your way. And the more you can push it to the side and focus on being the best you can be and overcoming your own internal fears and assumptions, the better you will be, not only as a leader, but just the better you'll feel about yourself. And sometimes it's just taking that risk of putting all the doubts out of your head and saying, what's the worst that can happen?
Mm-hmm.
And like that example that I gave when I asked
if
I could bring my son. Now, I would love to say I was thinking through what's the worst that could happen. I wasn't. I just was telling him what I needed. But the worst that could have happened in that situation was he could have said no. When you narrow it down to something as simple as that, if you're going to ask for that raise, what's the worst that can happen? They say no.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the best that can happen? They say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get so focused on all the things that can go wrong that we forget to think through all the positives that can occur. So, yes, so Tom gave me that terminology, and I think it's an easy way to think through, wow, I'm getting in my own way. Get out, head trash.
Right. Well, and that also helps bolster confidence as well. If you set aside the trash and you feel more confident in, you know, however you're going to move forward, people respond more to confidence than they do to that insecurity that may be showing its head as you're talking to yourself inside your head, right?
Yes. And you know, Lori, another thing that comes to my mind on this topic is if you're doing the right thing, you're operating with integrity, you're being honest, you're doing the best you can, and somebody else has a bad reaction to what you do, knowing that you did it correctly, that's their problem, not yours. And that has been very helpful to me to start thinking, I'm not going to please everyone. All I can do is the best that I can do. If I do something wrong, I need to apologize. That's clear. But why let other people's responses stop you from doing the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
Almost always, things that you worry about, that you think people will assume or say, they don't happen when you're doing the right thing. When you're honest and operating with integrity and doing your best, all those things you worried about don't even happen because you did the right thing.
Right. And I think it is important to keep in mind that that person who's reacting to you, as you said, it's their thing. We don't always know what other people are experiencing at the time.
That's right.
And that's back into, it might not be talking trash in our head, but we might be telling ourselves stories in our head that might not be, you know, relevant or factual or true. And we're trying to rationalize something that might not exist there. You mentioned integrity. That was one of the second quotes I had wanted to go over. Have integrity. It drives trust and makes you a better leader. Part of that is listening. Most of the time, we're not present and in the moment because we're worrying about things we have to do, our Instagram feed, and anything other than where we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, comments on that?
Wow, there's a lot in that sentence. Integrity is who you are inside. It's what you do. It's how you act. It's what you do when nobody's watching, right? Trust is what other people decide about you.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Wow. If
you're operating with integrity, the likelihood that you'll build trust and build relationships is significantly higher. And sometimes it's really hard to do, depending on the environment that you're in, but you're always safe. If you're operating from a position of integrity, you don't have to worry about, oh, which version of the story did I tell today? Which part did I leave out? When you're honest and open and you have good communication with other people, they trust you, they believe you when you say something, and that builds relationships. That means you owe that to the other person as well. And that's why listening is so important. Open, honest communication. I can tell you a lot of things, but if I'm not willing to listen to where you're coming from and what you're bringing to the conversation and process that, then I'm not being fair in that relationship. I can't just tell you what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I need to listen and be open as well. And the best relationships, I think, are built upon this platform of integrity, trust, and being respectful of one another by listening, which gets to the last piece of it, which is being present in the conversation. It's so hard to do. Your phone's buzzing. There's somebody's trying to get your attention over here. And you know, when somebody's really paying attention to you, how good you feel. I feel the same way. The fact that you're sitting here listening to me right now, I feel really good about that. And that shows a level of respect to somebody that goes a long way. We have to take time to be present. It is really hard to do. We all carry a lot on our shoulders. Everybody brings other stuff with them wherever they go. But the more we can be present in the moment, it's respectful to the other person, but it's also respectful to yourself, because then you can really give your full attention to the subject at hand and consider it and make good decisions based upon that.
And get more value out of that relationship and that dialogue and that interaction and that experience. So that's wonderful. We're coming up on our next break, and I want to come back to a couple things you said when we come back. Folks, we are talking with Ann Baum this evening right here on Lehigh Valley Discourse, Lessons with Leaders. And Ann is the Lehigh Valley Executive and Vice President of Distribution Channels and Labor Relations for Capital Blue Cross, very involved in the community, and we appreciate her giving us some of her time this evening. We will be back in just a moment.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Lessons with Leaders. Our guest this evening is Ann Baum, Lehigh Valley Executive and Vice President, Distribution Channels, Labor Relations, Capital Blue Cross. Ann, we were just speaking about integrity and trust, and you were saying how important the two are, and that with integrity you are putting your best person forward, and that integrity is who you are, and trust is what people think of you. Is that what you had said?
Yes.
I thought that was really interesting, because I actually had never heard it that way before, and I think that's really powerful. And then you also said about being honest and open communication, and that if we are honest in our communication, you know, we really should be, you know, good to go. And I thought, as you were talking, I thought to myself, we sometimes are honest in our communication, but are we always honest in 100% of our communication? Meaning, how often do we find we might be honest with a person in what we're saying, but are we really saying everything that we need to? Are you following me on that?
It
hit me when you were talking, and I thought, open and honest communication can include sometimes we have to be honest about things that maybe we weren't intending to talk about.
You know? Yes.
Whether it's in the workplace or personal, you know, communications.
Yes, so I should add the caveat that it's not necessary to be brutally and meanly honest with people. What I'm referring to is more not being afraid of having difficult conversations with people. And if you think about the workplace, especially when you have somebody who is having a challenge, the longer you let that challenge go without addressing it, the more it will continue. And I have found that being productively honest with people about challenges that they face, 9.9 times out of 10, they're happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just mad about it. It is what it is. But the only way you can be a good leader and empower your team is to help them develop. And Elmer used to always say in our classes, as a leader, you have two really important jobs each day. One is to improve each system for which you're responsible each and every day. But the second and more important is to improve the people with which you work each and every day. And that means that you're sharing information with them, not only the good, hey, attaboy, good job, but also we did this, it turned out well, and next time let's do this to make it even better. Now, there's a fine line between being hypercritical and productively helpful and critical. So I think you've got to always be careful not to let the pendulum swing to you're never satisfied, but always looking at how something and someone can be a little bit better each day and working together on that. That's a great leader.
Yeah, that's great. And that also segues into your book, Small Mistakes, Big Consequences, because this could probably guide people on some of those small mistakes that we might make if we, you know, have some comment we want to make to someone and maybe we don't do it in the right way. That little small mistake could end up with a big consequence. So what prompted you to write this book?
Well, I've been forever just keeping little notes of things that would come to my attention. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to write a book? And of course, never thinking that that was really something, you know, one of those things like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if I were an Olympic gold medalist, right? So that's where the book thing fell on my list of, wouldn't that be nice? And then when Elmer and I were teaching our class at DeSales, I really started to get serious about the book and started actually writing it. And then you'll get such a kick out of this. So I showed it to friendly people. Like I showed it to my mom. Mom, what do you think about this? Oh, it's very good, honey. Leah pat you on the hand. And I'd showed it to Elmer and he liked it. So I'd showed it to people that were friends and I would refine it. But I didn't know what to do with it. And then I met a woman named Ann Alexander.
Yeah.
And she used to work at Rodale. And I showed it to her. And showed it. She looked it over. This is nice. And then I would say 6 months later, she said, I found a publisher for your book. And the irony of that was I finally put it out there to somebody other than my mom, right? Somebody who could actually help me. And then secondarily, a friend of mine who asked me to be a speaker at an event that she had, Jesse Seneca, said, get your book published by the time you speak so we can sell the book. So now it was out there as a challenge. And Anne, right around the same time, I'm convinced it's divine intervention, yeah, right? And then all of a sudden, everything fell into place. And I think partially it's because I put it out there and then was open to it. The opportunities may have been there all along, but because I was open to it and started to believe it could happen, it happened. And now we're working on the next one.
And back to how we started our conversation this evening, doing things on purpose or by opportunity. You do certain things by purpose and the opportunity presents itself.
Yes.
So that is wonderful. Well, what did you enjoy most? Did you get excited about the idea? Did you get excited about the writing? Did you get excited about finishing? Or, you know, when you got the call from Ann Alexander?
I think the most exciting thing to me is that people actually like it. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because when we first published it and it was a real thing and it was out on Amazon and I could hold it in my hands, that was really exciting. And everybody was congratulating me, but they hadn't even opened it. Yeah. It could have been horrible. They're like, oh, congratulations, you wrote a book. But when people have now read it and actually tell me that it's been helpful to them and asking when the next one is coming along, that to me is the most rewarding piece. Because I didn't do it so I could say, ooh, I'm an author. I did it because these concepts are things that people generally won't tell you that you're doing, but they can completely get in your way of being successful. And the fact that I put it out there and people read it and they found it to be useful, to me, that's the most rewarding thing, that my advice is helping someone.
Well, you also put it in a format that people can understand it quickly too. You know, nowadays when we do, you know, 2-minute YouTube videos, this book is perfect that people could pick this up and grab some of these concepts fairly quickly.
Well, thank you. One of the things that always drove me crazy about business books is they're somewhere around 250, 300 pages long. But most of them, the core message is probably in the first 50 to 100 pages. And then they just repeat it or back it up with data, which is all good. But I thought, why? We don't need all the fluff. Let's get to the point. Let's make it easy, make it useful, and make it something that people can learn from easily and not have to sit down and slog through 250 or 300 pages.
Right. Women, we're busy.
We don't have time for all that extra fluff.
Get to the point. What is your favorite lesson? Do you have a favorite lesson out of here? It's probably hard to pick.
It is really hard to pick. I think the core, if there's one overriding lesson, it's pay attention to your behavior. Think before you do and think how others will relate to you because of that. So I think that along with integrity and being a good listener, those are my common key components of anything. But really take the time to think through the presentation, you think through your data, your numbers, you make sure everything's spelled correctly. But you might not think about how you are presenting yourself. And that's the first thing people are judging. Mm-hmm. People judge you first by your body language. Second, by your expressions and your tone of voice. It's only after they've made a lot of decisions about you do they listen to what you're saying. And you may have completely tanked it before that you even get to the part you put all the time into. Mm-hmm. So put just as much time into thinking about how you're carrying yourself, how you're presenting yourself, how you're interacting with others, how you're listening or not listening, so that that first impression is the best impression, so that you can get to the real impact of your presentation or the meeting or what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how many people really think that through. As you're saying this.
I don't think they do as much as you should and could.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This book and all of your history with the protocol certification, how have you incorporated some of these ideals, concepts, into your work with your team at Capital Blue? Because you've got a huge team.
Well,
how do you make it work?
I think you have to walk the talk. And I am constantly trying to be the best that I can be so that I'm setting a good example, but also exhibit the advice that I'm trying to instill in others. And then checking in with them to see, is it working? Are you,
That's a good point. Checking in.
How am I doing? And giving team members the permission to tell me when I'm not making the grade. Because most people are afraid, the more lofty your title is, the more afraid people are to have that good discourse with you. And I can't be better if I don't know. And I try and tell people all along, let me know if there's something I could do better, if there's something I could do for you to make you better, let's do that. And so I'm constantly trying to lead by example. I think that's very important. But you have to lead, too. You can't just sit back and wait for things to happen. You have to get out there and be that risk taker. You have to fix things that aren't working and be brave enough to bring it to people's attention. Mm-hmm. And you have to be okay with failure and making mistakes and then be and own up to it. You can't point the finger at everybody else if you're the one that blew it.
Right. That's a good lesson as well. You're very involved in the community here. I mean, Anne, we see you everywhere. And if people don't know your name, if they saw your picture, they'd say, oh, that's right, I've seen her. Tell me about your community involvement. Was that through Capital Blue, or is it just kind of personally driven in some way?
Well, I think some of it started when I was young because my parents were always very involved in our community and always, it was funny. I remember being very young and our babysitter was there and my parents were always going to board meetings. I didn't know what a board meeting was, but if somebody were to ask me, oh, you know, where are your parents? Oh, they're at a board meeting. So I think some of it was just the culture of our family, and my grandparents were the same way, always very involved in their community. But I'll tell you, one of the things that really attracted us to the Lehigh Valley was that this is a community of corporate involvement and a community of givers. And that is something that kept us here. The ability to make a difference by being involved, by volunteering, and knowing that your time and your treasure is being well used, that's one of the greatest things about the Lehigh Valley. I've been to many communities around the country. I have never been in a community that is as giving from all levels, from our corporate CEOs right down to our frontline team members. I have never been in a community that is so focused on giving back to its community. And that's what I love about the Valley.
It's interesting because I spoke with Don Cunningham about the same thing. And I think, you know, what we do have in the Lehigh Valley are people with a lot of strong roots, mm-hmm. you know, and they know that by giving back in the community, it builds the community, and they've seen it through what we went through with Bethlehem Steel yes. and then in the revitalization. And us coming from the Midwest, I think we believe in community too. I tell people, when you're from the Midwest, you have to be kind of nice and involved with everyone because you could get caught in a snowbank and someone has to push you out.
So That's right.
It's all about community. Community and helping right. each other. We mentioned your son. You also have a daughter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how old are your kids now?
Our son is 25 and he's finding his way in the film industry out in California.
Wonderful.
Our daughter is 22. She's finishing up her master's in accounting at University of Miami. So total opposite, arts and creativity and accounting. So they could be good business partners in the future.
That's wonderful. And they have a copy of your book so that they can be successful and not make small mistakes for big consequences. I wanted to make sure that we mentioned your daughter because we mentioned your son earlier.
And she'll appreciate that.
And so they have had the same example that you had with your parents and your grandparents with being in the community and involved in the community. Are they taking on some of those examples from you as well?
Yes, I hope so. It's you never quite know how it will emerge, right? But it was very cute because our daughter graduated with her bachelor's in May, and she had a special tassel on her mortarboard. And I was asking her about it, and she said, oh, well, I gave to the Alumni Association, and because I gave to the Alumni Association, I got the special tassel. And I thought, oh, chip off the old block. She's yeah. already started right out of school and giving back to her alumni association. So it was great to see.
That's great. That's wonderful. And so do you see yourself staying here in the Lehigh Valley community, do you think?
Well, we just love the Lehigh Valley. We've made amazing friends. I love how our community continues to grow and evolve and really make itself better every day. We're perfectly located. You can get anywhere
I know.
That you'd like to go without, you know, really much difficulty at all. So it's a wonderful place to live. We really enjoy it.
And it's been wonderful getting to know you. I want to end with your book, The Small Mistakes, Big Consequences. Develop your soft skills to help you succeed with all of these wonderful lessons. And people can find this on Amazon?
Yes, it's available at Amazon.com or MimosaPublishing.com.
Okay, and you said you have a second book you're working on. What can we expect from that?
Yes, so it's part of the whole series, Small Mistakes, Big Consequences. The next one is focused on interviews.
congratulations on this.
Thank you.
Congratulations on all your endeavors and your success in your own career and your own personal life. And we thank you for being a great representative in our Lehigh Valley community for all that you do and all that you contribute. So
thank you,
so much for being here with us. I want to thank Ann Baum, our guest this evening on Lessons with Leaders, and we wish her continued success with her role as Lehigh Valley Executive and Vice President, Distribution Channels and Labor Relations at Capital Blue Cross. Thank you to Neil Heaver, our producer, and especially to our listeners. Be your best with purpose and passion, and you will be a leader. Have a lovely tomorrow.